Whew. Sit down if you're still standing up. Whew. You know, there may be a song that tells the gospel story better than that one, but I've never heard it. See what I'm talking about, Pastor? I warned Dennis about this one this morning. All right. If you have your Bibles, 1 Samuel 17. Going to be start out around verse 31. It's not back though. But I got it here, so don't you worry about that. It's all right, Travis. Don't worry about it. All right, I'm going to start. We're going to read verses 31 through 34, and then we'll talk about that, and we'll kind of move along as we go. It says, when the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth. So just to recap last week, David's dad Jesse sent him to the Valley of Elah to deliver supplies to his three oldest brothers who were there fighting with the army. The Israelites led by Saul are camped on one side of the valley on a mountain slope, and the Philistines are set up on the other side across the valley. And every day for over a month, the great warrior Goliath would walk to near the Israelite camp, hurling insults, demanding someone face him in winner-take-all single combat. And so far, it's crickets. No one from Israel, not even King Saul, wants any part of this Philistine wrecking ball. And David cannot understand why. Because Goliath has been openly insolent. He's been disrespectful to God's people. And not only that, but Saul has really sweetened up the pot. Because not only will the man who kills Goliath get national recognition for doing so, but Saul also promises to make him richer than he ever thought possible, to exempt his entire family from paying taxes, and to give him one of his daughters as his wife. So national glory, lavish wealth, free from taxation for you and your family, and you get to be the king's son-in-law. This man would never need to work again. His children, their children, their children's children, their children's children's children would never want for anything. And still, nobody is raising their hand. Nobody's coming forward to fight Goliath. And we know that David heard Goliath's insults, right? Verse 23 told us that. And if the guys in the army aren't willing to respond to what David sees as a clear defiance and disrespect toward the God of the universe, nor are they willing to fight for the generational security of their own families, well, David's starting to ask them the same question that his older brother asked him, which is, why are you even here? Why are you even here? I think that's what David's trying to figure out. That's why he's going around talking to so many different people. It's like he must be missing something, because what he knows about this situation doesn't make any sense to him. David wants to know why these guys aren't lining up to fight Goliath, while they're not fighting each other for the opportunity to fight Goliath. And of course, somebody has to go and run tell Saul that David's running around the camp asking questions. Because those folks are always around, aren't they? Those sneaky little opportunists who nobody really likes, who spend good energy finding new ways to suck up to the boss, right? They drive around in their little Priuses with their Georgia Tech license plates, stickers all over the back, because whatever the latest trendy cause is, that's what they support. And they go running to Saul. So Saul sends for David. And in verse 32, David offers to fight Goliath. Now keep in mind, this is the first time David's volunteered to fight anybody. His statements up until this point really haven't been all that bold. But this is what happens when your focus is different than the focus of everyone around you. They'll often misread your intentions and they'll assume the worst. I think that's what's happening here. But for David, this is an identity issue. Listen to his words from verse 26 again. "For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" So David's not talking down to Saul's army. In fact, it's the opposite. He doesn't see these guys as Saul's army. He sees them as God's army. That's why he doesn't understand how timid and weak they are. He thought he left the sheep back in Bethlehem. So when David goes to see Saul, he tells him, "Look, your guys don't need to be afraid anymore, okay? I'll go fight Goliath." Which sounds like a very arrogant statement to make, but it's a statement Saul has been waiting over a month for somebody to make. He just didn't expect it to come from the mouth of his music man. And Saul, he really does bring up a good point in verse 33. He says, "David, you cannot fight him. He has been a war fighter longer than you've been alive, son." Which, if you're seeing the circumstances through man-focused lenses, just looking at the natural in front of you, Saul's logic is spot on. It's spot on. Let's forget about the size difference between David and Goliath for a sec, okay? Let's just pretend that Goliath and David are the exact same size. So physically, they are equals. Now, think about this. Goliath is a Special Forces combat veteran with multiple deployments. David is a young shepherd who plays acoustic guitar. Who you got? You got to throw money down on one of them. Who you got? If you say David, you're lying. You're just lying. Unless you see like David sees. Because, y'all, I don't believe for a minute that David actually thought man-to-man he could beat Goliath. But for David, this was never about one man against one man. Because David doesn't see as man sees, remember? What God told Samuel back in chapter 16, David could now say to Saul, which was, "Do not look on his appearance or the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." David has God's heart and he has his eyes, which is how he can tell his king, starting in verse 36, "Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God." In other words, it's not your fight, Saul. It's not mine either. The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. I love verse 37 because where the English text reads, "the Lord who delivered me," that's not what the Hebrew says. In the Hebrew, David names him. This is Jehovah. This is the God of Israel. He uses his proper name, Jehovah, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear. The one that Genesis 2 says made the heavens and the earth, who formed man from the dust of the ground, who took the man and put him in the garden, who formed from the ground every living creature. This Jehovah who has delivered David in the past will now deliver him again. David has no doubt. He has no doubt. And you know, it's one thing to suggest that somebody should do something about that giant. But it's another thing entirely to tell your king, "I'm going to do something about that giant." But y'all, that's what's possible when you see like David sees. This is why David was chosen king, because he thinks like a king. He doesn't think like a peasant. He knows who he is, but more importantly, he knows who his God is. He knows who his God is because he knows him personally. That's why he uses his name, Jehovah. Y'all want to know what I'm convinced is the biggest giant threatening God's people today? I'm going to tell you, it's that. It's that right there. We don't know who we are. We think we do, but the choices we make don't always communicate that, do they? Followers of Jesus used to be, and still should be, the most radical life chasers on the planet. We should be trying to accomplish impossible things because nothing is impossible for our God. We still believe that. Okay, wrong room. Got it. We should be the most content, peace-filled folks around. But we're not. We're anxious, we're frustrated, and we are never satisfied. You know, it's really not enough to just be a good person, to be generous, to be friendly. Those things are important, yes, but folks who have no clue who Jesus is can do that. Folks far from Jesus can do those same things. And honestly, a lot of times, they do it better than church folks do. But you and I are meant to live lives of radical faith, trusting this great God to do great things in us and to do great things through us. And y'all, that does not have to mean that we're constantly switched on, that we're constantly overlooking the ordinary because all we can think about is the extraordinary. Okay? We should live our common lives, but always be mindful that we belong to an uncommon God. That's what David did. David did not come to the Elah Valley expecting to kill a giant and set all this stuff in motion. He came to see his brothers, remember? He came to bring them supplies that they needed, to tell them, hey, Dad loves y'all and he's praying for y'all. But when he recognized what was happening, because he sees as God sees, he spoke up and he stepped out in faith, and God used him mightily. How many incredible experiences have we lost out on because in those moments, we chose to see as Saul sees, not as David sees. And it's not that we're never permitted to question things or to be unsure about expectations, okay? It's not that we're not allowed to be afraid. But when that fear sneaks in, we got two options. We can run away from it, hoping it doesn't chase us, or we can run toward it, trusting our God to overcome it. And that's what David did. Because we can see his confidence growing once he chooses his faith over his fear. As we move through chapter 17, David's focus sharpens. First, it was, you know, somebody should really do something about this giant Philistine guy over here. And then later on, he told the king, you know, I'll go and fight the giant. Your guys don't need to be worried anymore. I'll take care of it. And then at the battle line with Goliath directly in front of him, he tells him, I'm going to drop you where you stand. I'm going to cut off your ugly Philistine head with your own sword. And then this army behind me, you see them? I'm going to turn them loose. And the wild beasts that roam this valley are going to feast on your dead bodies. Or something like that. You see the escalation of the boldness in David? Because that's what faith does. It feeds itself. I believe there could have been 10 Goliaths standing in front of David at that point. It didn't matter. It did not matter. David was spirit-filled. He was front-sight focused. And it was just a bad day to be a giant. But y'all, this is so important. This is so important. David did not rise to the occasion, okay? David did not rise to the occasion because most humans just don't do that. They don't. We fall to the level of our training, and David has been training and preparing for this moment most of his life. He just wasn't aware of it. We see that in verses 34 and 35. David tells Saul, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father, and when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and I struck him and killed him." Y'all, this is so what God does. He uses ordinary life to prepare us for extraordinary things. As a shepherd, David was just doing what shepherds do. They protect their flock. What he's describing in verses 34 and 35 was his job. That's all it was to him. He had no clue that he was developing real courage, real bravery. And he was also learning discretion. You see in verse 35 where David says that if a lion or a bear took a lamb away from the flock, that he tracked down that predator and he'd only do what was necessary to rescue the lamb. David's goal wasn't to kill, it was to save. However, if that predator makes a move for David, well, then all bets are off. And David didn't tell that mountain lion, "Go on now, get, go home," right? David said, "I grabbed him by his beard and I showed that cat just who is on the top of the food chain around here." David learned to do what was necessary to protect and preserve life. And that's exactly what he's doing now in this valley. It's the same thing. We may never understand why our lives are what they are or why God allows us the experiences he does. And I think David's story shows us that big picture, the why really doesn't matter. What matters is that we're faithful wherever we are, doing whatever we're doing. If David had ran from the predators and just let them decimate his daddy's flock, there is no way he's ready for this moment with Goliath. There's no way. And the same thing goes for us. If we are not willing to be faithful now, we are never going to be faithful then. It's not going to happen. It's what Jesus said in Luke 16 in his parable of the dishonest manager. He said, "One who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much. And one who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much." Jesus unpacks that thought even further in verse 11. He said, "If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches?" Do we want to be used by God in mighty ways? I mean giant killing ways. If we do, we have to be faithful in the little things. We have to. What you spend your money on matters. What you do when no one's around matters. How you treat people who can do nothing for you in return matters. We either trust that God is who He says He is and that we are who He says we are, or we don't. It's that simple. And I can't just turn some of my life or most of my life over to Jesus. He doesn't work that way. He never has. He wants all of everything. And David understood that because his heart was like God's heart. And y'all, it wasn't because David was born that way. He wasn't. It's because David trusted and he believed and he chose to walk by faith and not by sight. David viewed all of life through faithful eyes. So what seemed like an impossible task to Saul, killing the legendary warfighter Goliath, well, to David, it was just Thursday. It was just Thursday. David's faith convinced him that just like God had delivered him from the paw of the bear or the lion so many times before, that on this day, he was also going to deliver him from the hand of the Philistine. Just an easy day, brother. Just an easy day. Y'all, David's story shows us that everything we go through in life, good and bad, God uses to prepare us for where He wants to take us next. I really believe David's hard life as a simple shepherd, facing down those predators, enduring the elements, sitting alone in silence, praying and thinking, meditating on God's law, all of it was to get him ready for this moment, which God would then use to propel him forward into the kingship of Israel, winning the hearts and minds of his people along the way. But this hard life also taught David something else, something very important. Through this hard, simple life, David learned who he really was. David wasn't just faithful and brave, he was self-aware. This moment wasn't too big for David because he knew nothing was too big for his God. David knew exactly who he was, exactly who he belonged to. Things that it seems every other Israelite in that war camp had forgotten. And because David knew and he accepted who he was not going to let himself try to be anyone else. Saul, King Saul, bless him, wanted David to use his armor. He wanted David to use his weapons. And to appease his king, David tried. But it didn't work. Because David's not Saul. He's David. But we often think like Saul, don't we? Well, this worked for me. It should work for you. Or, hey, this worked really well for them. How come it didn't work for us? Well, because we're not them, right? We're not them. Some folks wake up early before the sun and spend time alone with Jesus. Other folks, like my dear friend Miss Janie, who says if God wanted her to see the sunset, He'd have put it at 11 a.m. Right, Miss Janie? Is that the great quote? And that's okay. I mean, that's okay. God made all of us unique individuals. You are exclusive to you. Don't try to be someone else. Don't compare yourself to someone else. That's the worst. And churches are horrible with this. Y'all know who Rick Warren is, right? Purpose-driven life? Okay. He also wrote a book called The Purpose-Driven Church. I don't know if any of y'all read that one. And from that book, he developed these church growth strategies, these church health strategies for other churches to use and implement so that their churches could grow and their churches could get healthier. Didn't work. And the biggest reason it didn't work for most churches is because you can duplicate Rick Warren's ideas, but you can't duplicate Rick Warren. Rick Warren was raised up for a specific church at a specific time in a specific community for a specific purpose. Other church leaders cannot wear his armor. They cannot fight with his weapons. Too many churches and too many people are trying to be something else, because either they don't know who they are or they don't believe that who they are is enough. Look at me. You are enough. You're enough because your God is enough. Jesus is enough. And you belong to Jesus. If you're going to borrow any attribute from any other person, borrow this one from David. Accept who you are. Accept it. But more importantly, always remember the God you belong to. Now, I'm sorry I didn't get to the battle this week. I meant to. Stuff happens. But I promise we'll be there next week. That's like the next verse. So we'll get there next week. It's like I said before, there is so much more going on in this story than Goliath's height, right? There's so much more there. So much more for us to learn. And it's good stuff, you know. It's stuff that we can actually install in our own lives and make us better at life. And we're going to get into more of that next week when we get into the battle scene. But for now, let me pray for us.